The Seat of the Soul Institute presents The Good, the Bad, and the Spiritual with Gary Zukav and Linda Francis.
So, why are we doing all this? Well, you could say it's always good to improve oneself. After all, there's stress management, anger management, learning how to be more sociable instead of asocial, learning how to get along with people, learning how to do better at work, learning how to be better parents, learning how to control your drinking or your sexual addiction or your need to shop. Well, all of those are good things. And in the past, that was really when we had limited sight, all that we could see. But now we have super sight. And the perspective from super sight is awesome. The perspective from super sight is that we are not only physical beings, that we are not only collections of molecules and enzymes and organs and neurotransmitters, that we are more than affect and perception and cognition. We are more. And the world that we are living in is more than our five senses can reveal. But yet, somehow, we're beginning to sense it. We're acquiring super sight. There's lots of ways of experiencing super sight. But one of the most exciting is to begin to sense that you're more than you thought you were. That you're more than a mind and a body. And from the perception of that part of you that's more than a mind and a body, everything changes. The old goals, the old victories are not so important anymore. Other things become more attractive, more satisfying, more rewarding. What is this that you are that is more than you thought you were? That's your soul. Now, you can look at it in any way that you want. I'm going to use the word soul because I think that's a beautiful word and an accurate word. It's a part of you that is immortal. Now, you're not immortal. So now we have to be careful when we say you. We're talking about you, or are we talking about you with a big Y? The you with a big Y is your soul. That's the part of you that existed before you were born and will continue to exist after you die. Well, what's the you with a little Y? I mean, the part of you that's going to die because you're going to die. I hope no one has any illusions about that. Your time on the earth is limited, and yet it's quite expansive, and yet it goes by just like that, all at the same time. That's from the perspective of the you with a big Y, your soul. The you that's going to die is the you that bears your name, is the you that was born on a certain date and will leave the earth school on a certain date. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. That's where you're headed, you with a little Y. But there's a reason why there's a you with a little Y, and it's important, it's very important. The you with a little Y is your personality. Your personality is your energy tool. It's a tool that your soul adopts, uses in order to have certain experiences in the domain of physicalness. Your personality is all the things that psychologists would call a personality. Those things I mentioned, affect, your feelings, perception, the five senses, cognition, your intellect, how you put the data of the five senses together. And while as a species we had limited sight, that's what we saw, that's who we thought we were, and our goal was to perpetuate that as much as possible, which means survive. Survive and procreate. Survive and defend. Survive by attacking. Survive manipulating the outside world. When we had limited sight, the outside world was all that we focused on. And in fact, we thought that emotions are useless, really getting in the way quite a bit, like an appendix that's inflamed. Who needs it? I got things to do. I got money to make. I got sex to find. I got a family to raise. I don't need emotions. So people would generally push them away, somebody else's problems, without noticing that they drink a lot, or that they can't stop shopping, or thinking about how they want to impress other people, or they just don't see it. And that's how most of us lived most of our lives. Now, when I say our, I'm talking about the human family, all the way back to the origin of the human family, until recently, with the emergence of supersight. With supersight, we begin to realize some things that are game changers. Number one, nothing dies at death. Your personality is discarded by your soul. Here's another story, and I think it's a true one, but I wasn't there myself, of a Zen teacher, a monk, a teacher, so he must have been a master in San Francisco, who got cancer. And some of his students were crying by his bedside, and he said, why weep? Nothing changes. He saw from supersight. And he wasn't attached to the personality that was in the process of being discarded. Maybe there were parts of that personality that were attached and didn't like it, but he knew enough. He had enough skill. He had enough courage not to be controlled by those parts and to be a teacher, a beacon of light, a helpful friend to those people around him, right up until the time that his soul returned and his personality began its final trip into ashes and dust. Well, with supersight, we began to see those things. And not only that, we began to see it's more interesting to look from the perception of the soul, to use supersight, rather than to continue to operate in our lives from the limited perception of limited sight. I read a poem. It's so beautiful. It touched me immediately because it expresses to me the difference between soul and personality. It was written by one of my favorite poets, Juan Ramon Jimenez, a Spanish poet and a Nobel laureate, a poet laureate. And he wrote, "I am not I. I am not I. I am this one walking beside me, whom I do not see, whom at times I manage to visit, and whom at other times I forget, who remains calm and silent while I talk, and forgives gently when I hate, who walks where I am not, who will remain standing when I die." That's supersight. And that is the sight that millions of us, thank you, beloved, that millions of us, hundreds of millions of us, are now beginning to experience. And it's touching each of us in different ways. One way is that we're not dismissive of this anymore. You know, just in the 1940s, the 30s, the 50s, even in the 60s, in the age of flower children and drugs and free sex, there was the beginning emergence of what we're now into, a higher perception. There were precursors in the last 20 or 30 years to this evolutionary transformation that is now in effect. What were some of those precursors? Citizen diplomacy. The women, the feminist movement. The environmental movement. A general sense that of responsibility, of individuals saying, I will not contribute to this any longer. And now we have passed the threshold. We're in new territory. The perceptions of limited sight no longer serve us. Try this out for yourself. As you go through this retreat, you'll see that if you apply the values and the perceptions that come naturally with limited sight, they are counterproductive now. Counterproductive to your evolution, to your joy, to your health, to your well-being, to your creativity, to your ability to give the gifts that you were born to give. Now, the personality is very interesting. That's what we'll be working with here, but never without a sense of the soul. Your personality has different parts of it, different facets. Like some of them, some parts, in other words, it's not a single thing that sometimes is this and sometimes is that. It is a thing that has different aspects, and those aspects are quite vivid and recognizable and identifiable. For example, when you get angry, that's not you getting angry, your whole personality, certainly not your soul, because that's a different set of experiences. It is a part of your personality that got triggered, and you're suddenly angry. When you feel inferior or need to please, or getting someone to smile is the only thing that's important to you. It's not you. It's a part of your personality that has those experiences. When you feel entitled to everything in the world, when you feel that you have the right to do anything you want, anytime you want it, that the world is your plum, that is the experience of a part of your personality. There's other parts of your personality that are more generous and gracious and appreciative and open and flexible and limber. Those parts of your personality that are appreciative and flexible and limber and open and patient and kind and caring, they feel good when you experience them. And so you feel good. And their thoughts are always thoughts of gratitude and patience and appreciation and care. So whenever you're having those thoughts, those kinds of thoughts, you know that you're in these kinds of parts of your personality. Now, what about the other parts? Parts that are angry, jealous, resentful, superior, inferior.
Feel overwhelmed, feel stressed out, and on and on and on.
None of those parts feel good. I think you may have some experience with that. They really don't feel good, and some of them are excruciating. You feel these as physical sensations. As you become aware, as you develop emotional awareness, you can feel these as physical sensations in your body. And for the moment, trust me, they don't feel good. You won't have to trust me on this very much longer if you don't, if you have to already, because we're going to go there. If you choose, all of this is voluntary. For that matter, your life is voluntary. You weren't born randomly into a random and merciless or dead world, scientifically we'd say inert. You volunteered as a soul for an experience in the domain of the five senses, in the domain of the three dimensions, in the domain of duality, time, space, and matter. And it's in this domain that we are now talking to one another. While we can also communicate, we can sense that familiarity, we can sense that connection that goes beyond what the five senses can show us, that soul-to-soul connection. We've all grown up used to personality-to-personality connection. which means the connection of a white woman to a brown man or a black man to a yellow business person or a German Catholic to a South American, a Brazilian Catholic, and on and on and on. All of those are characteristics of your personality. Some people work with their hands. Some people work with ideas. Some people create with images. Some people create with, well, you name it. Whatever the talents and aptitudes you have are, they belong to your personality. So, your personality has these different aspects. Some of them feel very painful. Think critical, judgmental thoughts, like, she's so stupid, or I'm so stupid, or I'm better than these people, or these people are better than me.
So the thoughts are also comparing, not just judgmental and critical, it's comparing you to another person. Well, that's judgmental and critical, but analyzing.
That's right. And when your thoughts tell you that you come out on top, you feel better about yourself and you feel safe for a little while. When your thoughts tell you, uh-oh, I'm not coming out on top, then you feel bad and you feel vulnerable and you don't feel good about yourself. So how can we refer to this vast, complex, rich, deep, powerful configuration of energy dynamics? Let's call them parts of the personality. And then let's group them. This is pretty easy. They all fall into two groups. One group, as I mentioned, we'll put it over here. Well, I don't want to be unfair to you on this side. We'll put the painful parts over here for a while. Painful sensations, critical thoughts. Intention is always the same, to change the outside world so that they'll feel better about themselves. Let's call this, let's give a generic name to this category of fear. Over here are the parts that are loving, patient, grateful, content, feel good. The sensations feel good. The thoughts are always of those thoughts. And the intentions are the intentions of the soul. Did I mention the soul has intentions? It does. Harmony, cooperation, sharing, and reverence for life. These are the intentions of the parts of the personality in this category. Let's give this category the generic name of love. So as you become familiar with the parts of your personality, as you become the physician who knows herself, you begin to be able to distinguish within yourself between these two categories. And you'll see by what your body tells you as you develop somatic emotional awareness, if a frightened part of your personality is active or not. You might think, well, I always know that. First of all, some people don't think or don't, in the moment, feel anything. But you can learn. Now, I remember once, a long time ago, sitting in a coffee shop in San Francisco, and I was complaining about someone to someone I didn't know. And this fellow looked at me and said, whoa, jealous. He was talking to me. But that didn't occur to me at the time. I thought I was just telling it like it is. And I even got, I can't remember, I probably got a little defensive. But that's an example, one of thousands in my life of when I was feeling something and didn't know it.
But it's amazing to me that a person said that to you and it stuck with you all these years.
Yeah, it did.
Isn't that amazing? It pointed to something. It was the truth.
Yeah, the truth sticks. But in this case, I still work on that. But the truth of it, the truth of his perception, surprised me. What surprised me was how unknowing, how unaware I was that a stranger could see something and mention it as a reaction, really, as a surprised reaction. It let me see, although I didn't penetrate very far at the time, how much more I could become aware of who I am, what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what I'm doing, and what I'm creating. Now, what happens when you actually do all of that, or you set on the path to doing all of that? That's creating authentic power. That's aligning yourself with the parts of your personality that come in the love category. These are parts of your personality that originate in love. They express love. They're already loving. You don't have to make them more loving. All you have to do is choose to act from them. The other parts of your personality, the ones that are angry, bitter, judgmental, you can't heal them. They're always that way. They're always, you might say, world-class players. When they step on the court, the one that's angry is world-class angry. The one that's jealous is world-class jealousy. The one that feels superior is world-class superior. Arrogance off the scale, whether the person that has it can see it or not. The one that's resentful, world. When that part comes up, it's world-class resentment. So it's not a matter of trying to embrace it. Yes, you have to experience it fully. If that's how you use embrace, I do too. It means really, and not try to push that away and say, I don't feel like killing him. That thought wouldn't even come to me. I don't feel like looking down on that person because his skin is different than mine. I don't feel like I'm superior because I have this education and this person doesn't. I don't even want to think that about myself. When I have those kinds of experiences, I condemn myself to being caught in them indefinitely. The more I push them away, just like a clergyman who says, I am not attracted to a whore. I am not. That kind of sex is dirty, brutal, it's inhuman, and then winds up with a prostitute or whatever it is that he or she most despises.
So you're saying that denying what's actually going on in you, being in denial of what you're feeling and pretending like you're not feeling that and that you don't feel that, actually doesn't do anything except for strengthen it.
Exactly.
Does that make sense to everyone?
So what we're suggesting to you is that you never deny or suppress or attempt to repress an emotion, but instead feel it fully. Feel it fully.
Or saying an affirmation even, I'm not a jealous person. I'm not a jealous person. Well, that's great, except that if you are a jealous person, it's not really true.
If a part of your personality that's jealous is active and you don't, and you let it control you, then it's not true.
Right. So I was a very jealous person and I didn't really recognize how jealous I was until Gary and I were in a spiritual partnership and we started our spiritual partnership. And I could say, I could pretend like I wasn't jealous. I actually felt like I had a right to feel jealous because there were circumstances that made me feel jealous. I couldn't help it. But what I realized is that there were circumstances that would happen that would bring that jealousy up in me, that frightened part of my personality that felt jealous. And I began, because then by that time, I realized that looking outside of myself and trying to change other people wasn't going to work anymore, that I needed to stop and change who I was and what was going on in me, not all the other people who were making me jealous or making me angry or making me feel upset or making me feel overwhelmed or whatever I thought that was happening. So I stopped and I started looking at that, and Gary really supported me as my spiritual partner because I told him, I said, I see that there are circumstances that come up where I am jealous because I see someone I think you might be attracted to, like at a party or something. I would see a woman I thought he was attracted to, and I started feeling all of those feelings in me that I'd felt all my life, this jealousy. I'd feel it in my chest area. I'd feel it in my solar plexus. And I could have said to Gary or to myself, I'm not a jealous person. I'm not a jealous person. That wouldn't have changed it. You know, once I recognized it, it was really feeling that part of me, because it was strong. Before I would act it out and I would push away my partner, I'd push away the person, I'd judge the other person, and I'd feel justified in doing that. But instead, I started noticing, wow, I feel that feeling again. I'm hearing these thoughts that this person is better than I am or looks better than I am. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my partner. Things that all the thoughts. And then it would be anger. You know, all kinds of things would come up. So instead, I would feel what was going on in my body. Notice the thoughts, but not act in the way that I used to. So instead, I would say something to Gary. I'd go right up to him and say, Gary, I'm having these thoughts again and these feelings again. And I'm not going to act on them. I'm not going to separate myself from you because I feel this way, because that's what I would have done in the past, really separated myself from the person I was with, because it was their fault that I felt jealous, right? It's their fault. But instead, I would feel it, and I began to change that in me, and that's the only thing that changed it, and I just kept doing that every time it would come up until it was so... in other words, I kept gaining power over that part of me. So I hardly ever feel it ever anymore. Once in a while, I'll feel it and go, oh, there you are again. It's okay. It's really okay because I'm not going to act on it. I know when it's there. I know when it comes up. It's so, so seldom. But at first, it was very strong. In fact, most of my life until I saw, until I could see it. I could hear its thoughts. I could know what it was, what was going on in my body, and know the kinds of ways that I used to act and not act on it and feel it instead. Very powerful. And you can do that with each frightened part of your personality that Gary's talking about, each one that's based in fear. And you were part of that process, a really important part.
You can also do that with each part of your personality that's based in love. Except in that case, your intention is to act on it. In other words, when you feel maybe you step onto a bus if you live in a city and you put your money or you pass in and you look at the driver for a minute and there's something there. There's something there. It's a real connection. You can note that. You cannot say, well, that was quite a guy. You can say, that was a connection and I saw it. That was soul-to-soul connection. I don't know anything about his history. I don't know anything about... Sometimes you do as you get super sight, by the way. That's interesting, too. But when you are aware of a loving part of your personality, you can savor the beautiful feelings, the beautiful physical sensations you have. You can appreciate your thoughts of gratitude and patience and caring without second agendas. And you can observe your intention, which will be to contribute, to give, not to take for yourself. So you can cultivate the loving parts of your personality, and you can challenge the frightened parts of your personality. And that is the process of creating authentic power.
And by challenging, you mean not acting on it.
Not acting on it.
Even when it's present.
Yes. Feeling it fully. Now, it feels wonderful when a loving part of your personality is active. But when a frightened part of your personality is active, that takes courage to feel it. That takes real courage. And by the way, beware of the difference between joy and happiness. Happiness occurs when a frightened part of your personality gets what it wants. Money closes the deal, sex, just the shoes you wanted on sale, the person you wanted to spend your life with smiles at you in a real sweet way, and suddenly, wow, you're right at the top of the roller coaster. And then somebody...
That's a good metaphor.
And then somebody backs into your new Mercedes on the side, not on the bumper, you know, Or your stock portfolio suddenly drops 30% one night. Or you're walking down the street and there's the person you want to spend your life with walking toward you, holding hands with someone. Wow, now you're right at the bottom of the roller coaster. This is happiness. This is real pain. But that's all right, because you keep trying to rearrange the world, find someone else you want to be with, rebuild the value of the stock portfolio, and eventually you can get up here again, and that's happiness. And then down you go again when the world doesn't match your expectations or desires, the expectations or desires of a frightened part of your personality. Don't think that that's joy. So when I said you can really appreciate the wonderful feelings of a loving part of your personality, that's not the same as the temporary anesthetic that you feel when the frightened part of your personality gets what it wants. But anyway, that's creating authentic power. Authentic power is aligning your personality with your soul. Your soul wants harmony, cooperation, sharing, and reverence for life. What keeps you from expressing and creating and developing and enjoying those things? Put it in one word. What keeps you from doing that? Yes, the generic category of fear. We can name all those other things. We can say, my anger, my jealousy, my resentment, my superiority, my inferiority, my inability to stop trying to avoid cracks in the sidewalk, or shop, or smoke, or play poker, or watch pornography. Yeah, all of those things are preventing you from giving the gifts that you were born to give.
If you don't challenge them.
If you don't, yes,
precisely. If you let them out, if you act, let them act through you.
So you begin to see that we're in a wise and compassionate universe, because you're always running into someone who's going to activate one of those parts of your personality for you. Maybe it happens so often you say to yourself, I've had it, I'm going to be a hermit, I'm going to join a monastery, I'm going to withdraw from all of this, I'm going to wear a robe, and I'm going to meditate 16 hours a day. Well, it's not going to work, because eventually you're going to find out that your other monks began to bug you, the other nuns. And then you're going to have to withdraw into a hermitage. And they bring you food, and they leave it outside the door. Well, that's good too, but eventually you have to come out. Your body's emaciating, your hair is falling out. You've got to come out and be in the world again, and there's someone who's not going to do what you want to do. And up comes a frightened part of your personality. So you begin to see that these experiences of pain and love are valuable. They're messages. They're telling you things you need to know about yourself in order to change yourself to move into your full potential. So all of the things, now those things we're calling, that we used to call emotions, that were nuisances like an inflamed appendix, they're really very important. And when you use your will to align your personality with the loving parts of your personality, then you create authentic power. And this is the power that Supersight is now making visible. And is very different from the power that we perceived when we had limited sight. That power was the ability to manipulate and control. And that power is external power. The ability to change the world outside of you in order for you to feel safer or more valuable. Now we can say more accurately, in order for frightened parts of your personality to feel safe and valuable. So that's it. The frightened parts of your personality always pursue external power. That's what they're doing when they get angry or withdraw, or they get weepy, or they feel superior or inferior. And the loving parts of your personality always contribute to life. Their joy is in life. Their joy is in connection. And you, as you develop Supersight, and you are beginning to see that you have a choice. You have a choice. So The creation of authentic power is the injection of consciousness into your life. You step into your life, not this part of it or that part of it. You don't go to a workshop and you go home and you say, yeah, well, I knew this anyway, or, well, I got some good insights there. But you actually use it. When you come to this workshop, this create shop, this play shop, this exploratory, bold, courageous movement into your own life with your own consciousness, then when you leave it, you're faced immediately with another decision. Am I going to apply what I learned? Or maybe just what I glimpsed before I shut everything out in superiority or inferiority. Because when you resist the world, you are resisting your life. Let me say that again. When you are resisting the world, you are resisting your life. And that's fear. Those are the frightened parts of your personality that do that. And when you challenge them by experiencing them, I mean really experiencing them, and not acting on them, then you are on a new path. At that moment, at that very moment of feeling the full force and power of your anger, or the full force and power of your need for a drink, or the full force and power of your need for sex, or the full force and power of your need to be admired and not act on it, that's the moment of creating authentic power. That's it. That's the moment. And those moments are always being offered to you. And as you challenge the frightened parts of your personality again and again and again and again and again, they begin to lose their control over you, just like Linda explained with her jealousy. You still feel them, but they don't penetrate as deeply as they used to. Their experiences begin to run off of you like a water in the shower, or like water off the feathers of a duck. And then you still see your need for sex or alcohol, or your anger come up, or your resentment or jealousy or inferiority, and you can feel it. You can feel it. It hurts. You see its thoughts. They're so magnetic. They're so real. They're so unarguably true. And you still decide to act from a loving part of your personality, or as the healthiest part that you can reach in that moment. That's when you create authentic power. And there's no other way to create it. You can't wish it into being. You can't read books. You can't watch movies. You have to create authentic power. And you can create, and the only way you can create that is decision by decision, choice by choice. And your personality is your friend in all of this. Don't think, I wish I didn't have this damn personality. Everything would be okay. You do. You're going to have a personality until the moment that you die, that your soul returns to non-physical reality. And everything that happens in the Earth School is sacred. And it's holy, and it's happening in the present moment, and it's happening for a reason. And the reason is your spiritual growth, your spiritual development. Not to make you grow spiritually, but to give you the opportunity to grow spiritually. To show you in a way that you cannot deny, once you see it, the power of your own creativity. And the thirst to use it wisely, to give to life rather than resist it, take from it, judge it, or cut a little piece of the experience out and say, this is who I am. Now, on this path, even if you're just beginning it, like you may be, and even though I've been teaching this and talking about it for 20 years, like I am, I'm a beginner all the time. You know, we have a friend. We have, in the last year, made a wonderful friend, Maya Angelou. And she told us a story once that was just so charming. And it's true. She said, when somebody tells me I'm a Christian, I say, really? Already? I'm 84 and I've been working on it and I'm not there yet. That's how I feel about authentic power. I'm not 84. I'm almost 70. But I have been working a long time. And I intend to continue to work on it, because when I started, I was a sex addict. I was riding motorcycles. I was very superior and entitled. I was experimenting with drugs. I was using the world. And now I'm coming to love people. And there's nothing wrong with riding motorcycles, by the way. But when you're riding motorcycles or doing anything else, because it's part of your image, because you need that to feel superior, well, there's nothing wrong with that either. It's just that you'll create painful consequences for yourself, and you won't move in the direction of experiencing the fullness of what you are and what you have to give. So when I was angry, I didn't see anything wrong with it. I would tell people, look, I'm angry. Take it or leave it. I've always been angry. I always will be angry. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. And as a result, people pushed me away. They didn't want to be intimate with me. I intimidated them. And I felt isolated and lonely. And the more isolated and lonely I felt, the more angry I became at the world. I didn't see that I was creating all of this. It just seemed to be a really cruel world. And so I spent a lot of time complaining about the universe and then really getting angry at it. Didn't do any good either.
So you're saying, in other words, you had frightened parts of your personality that had created quite a story of victimhood?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it. So when you, at this event or an event like this, because there's other ways that you can come to recognize that you're sleepwalking and recognize that there's already a part of you awake that doesn't want to do that anymore. But that's when you can begin to change yourself. That's not when change happens. Change happens when you begin to use what you're learning and what you see and apply it in your own life. Until then, you just think that you're improving. You just think that you're spiritual. You just think that. Think. But it's okay to think, because some thoughts, be aware of what you think. Some thoughts are contracting and limiting, like the universe is inert, random, and merciless. Oh, that's a closed thought. Another thought is that the universe is alive, wise, and compassionate. That opens you to new experiences. So I'm not saying that your cognitive function is simply useless anymore. I still know my zip code. I get email. But there's more to my experience now. We just met a wonderful teacher, Eckhart Tolle, and we got a little chance to spend some time with him and his wife. And you know, one of the things that he wanted to share with me, he didn't want to talk about presence. If I asked him a question, he would, but he didn't walk in talking about presence. He wanted to share about new iPhone apps.
So I've got some cool apps now.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, we are human, but what does it mean to become a real human, as our Sioux uncle used to say? That's what we're learning. That's the creation of authentic power. And as you get a sense of wanting to change your life, you know, one of the things along the path of creating authentic power is shock. Like one of the people that's working with us now and has been for 6 or 8 years, kind of early life lessons in the Authentic Power program, she wrote, I knew I was messed up, but I had no idea I was this messed up. It seems as though everything is pain. The more aware I become, the more pain I create. It's not like that. You don't create pain by becoming aware. That's like walking into a dark room, turning on the flashlight and saying, aha, I just created that couch. You become aware of what's there, and what's there is a lot of pain. It's also a lot of love. But if you're going to become aware of one, you're going to become aware of all of it. And that's the process of creating authentic power. And as you begin to taste that, even as the words begin to attract you, even if you're frightened at what's required, because sometimes you see something about yourself and you say, oh my God, and then you shut down right away. I'm not going to do that. There's too much at stake. My family, my job, my reputation. Well, there's a well-known Christian who once said, you can't see what I see any more than a rich man can, a camel can fit through the eye of a needle. Well, maybe he was saying, as long as you say to yourself, I can't change, I can't do that. No, I can't open to the love that I feel, not that way. It'll cost too much. Well, there's no right and there's no wrong. There's cause and there's effect. You're the cause each time you choose, and the effects you experience for yourself. That's the nature of the Earth School. There's no judgment in it. It's purely compassionate, wise, beneficent. Now, when you're on this path, you begin to be drawn to others who also want to be responsible for themselves, for what they choose to do, for what they choose to contribute to the world, that have the courage to look inside themselves when they hear something that's true and they don't want to hear it, which means when they react, when they explode. Instead, they're willing to feel that pain, explore it, and say, I'm not going to act on that. The person who just said this to me is more important to me than my acting on that again. When you start to feel that, then you begin to be open to spiritual partners and to spiritual partnerships. A spiritual partnership is a partnership between equals for the purpose of spiritual growth. And we'll go into it and really examine it and see how it's different from friendship and marriage and functional relationships like business. And that doesn't mean you can't be married and a business person and functional in the world and still have spiritual partnerships and spiritual partners around you.
Actually, in at your work and in your family and everywhere in your community.
That's right. That's right.
This has been a presentation of the Seat of the Soul Institute. Copyright 2012. Find out more at seatofthesoul.com.